Motivation is a huge point about changing a bad habit. It must be unwanted in some way. And the other is that a bad habit must not simply, or does not simply get ended. It must be replaced with a good habit, at least a good action.
Welcome to another episode of This Catholic Life, conversations about life's ups and downs, big and small, how we deal with every situation imaginable, whatever life throws at us, but still manage to be sensible, practical, and joyful. Today's show is about changing habits. We've spoken on many previous shows about virtues and how to change, how it's a good thing to change our habits if they're into good habits. We're going to talk about the practical issues to do with changing habits today. I'm your host, Peter Holmes, and today I'm joined by Father Paul Rouse. Welcome, Father.
Thank you, Peter. This is becoming a habit, joining you.
Indeed, and a very good habit, I hope. But let's talk about habits in general before we get stuck into good habits and bad habits. So when we talk about a habit, we're not necessarily talking about your state of dress.
No. No, habit is behavioral, first and foremost. It's a disposition set in us. Habitual and firm disposition, so we typically behave that way. When we're presented with the same kind of conditions as we've met before, it's our sometimes what people call second nature type response. What do we default to? That would be a habit.
It's a learned behavior that normally responds to the same circumstances. So I used to have a habit of chewing my nails. It was not good for me. And therefore, I used many different methods to try and stop chewing my nails. And now I have the opposite problem that I frequently find myself that I've forgotten to clip them and I catch them on something and like tear them off or something. So,
what did you do? Dip your fingers in chili sauce or something?
I tried this.
Did you really?
When I was a small child, my mother covered my nails with this vile tasting substance, and all it did was make it an unpleasant taste. It didn't change the way I actually dealt with it at all. And I can spot when my anxiety is peaking if the nails start to become attacked. But there is just certain mental tricks to trigger when you get to a certain point. I'm going to think this instead. So it requires discipline, but it also requires consciously being aware of my habits. Also used to go to the traffic lights and, you know, the little buttons you used to press to go across the lights before COVID. Yes. I used to sit there and just like tap it constantly. And I was with a friend who just said, I find that very annoying. And I was mortified because I didn't even realize I was doing it. It was just a habit. Mm. And these are quite trivial things, but.
My trivial thing was not getting a tissue to blow my nose. I wouldn't want to get up from what I was doing. And so I'd just sniffle and sit there and sniffle for a long time until one. My brother said to me, it's really rude to do that. So anyway, I now have a relationship with the box of tissues as needed.
Using that example as a kickoff, we can make doing the right thing easier by forming good habits. So, for example, if I'm going to sit down at my computer, I had a similar experience, by the way, Father, to your tissue example, but I'll grab a tissue box and make sure there's one within reach of my computer at all times.
Oh.
So that it's easier for me to actually, you know, to get what I need and do the right thing.
A high degree of self-knowledge is needed with all of this, isn't it? So
yes.
Often we come to identify our habits by introspection or retrospection. So we have thought
it's
about
two very
how
big words there, Father.
Yes. I hope everyone's had their Weet-Bix and their coffee before they listen to this podcast. In introspection, just by looking into, especially by hypotheticals, what we would do in a given situation.
Right.
Retrospection, what I did.
Right.
Okay. So,
and why did I do it, and was it the right thing to do?
Yeah, all of those things, perhaps little triggers and so forth. But the point is to have a mirror on oneself, to be taking time to be able to look back and see how we do things.
The practical issues of thinking through normal everyday circumstances mean that we don't do a lot of thinking. We sort of do things automatically. But I challenge my students in one of my classes to think that every single decision we make is a moral decision, sometimes very trivial moral decisions, but crossing the road is a moral decision. And I use the university's right on a very busy road. And I say, if you're at the lights, then crossing the at the lights is a moral decision, whether you wait for the green light to go or whether you think there's no cars, I'll just go across. And when the students doubt me, I say, well, what if you're there by yourself and you just go across? There's something important on the other side you want to run across. No one gets hurt. Is it okay? And they say mostly yes. But then you come to the point with, what if there's a young child watching you, standing beside you, and doesn't have the same capacity to get across the road in time, but he follows your example and is harmed in some way? What if that young child's actually in a block of flats watching from the distance and thinks this is the normal way in which things happen, and 2 weeks later makes the same bad decision? In other words, there's all kinds of consequences we can't foresee. Every decision is a moral decision. But most of us don't think these things through. We learn our habits by watching other people. And even when we've thought them through, we think them through to a certain level. But once we've done it once, it's, you know, we don't need to think every single time I come to the lights, wow, what are all the moral things here? I just go ahead with my normal habit. And the trick here, and as Catholics, we look at habits and say, is this a habit which disposes me to good things, to doing well? Or is it a habit that leaves me vulnerable to doing harm, like setting a bad example to the young child, for example, or perhaps risking my own life in an unnecessary way? Would you say that's a fair assessment of what we talk about when we say vices and virtues?
Yeah, so virtues and vices are habits,
right,
broadly speaking. So not everything that is a habit is a virtue or vice. A virtue always disposes us to do what is good. And the good in this understanding is both good acts, so that what I do is a good thing, but also that we give of our best self. So we do our best would be a popular way of saying that.
So I was raised with a certain kind of manners, and often referred to as country manners. And frankly, it makes it easy for me to be polite to people in certain circumstances, which is not actually me being a good person necessarily each time. Like I haven't sat there and had a moral debate with myself about whether to be nice to someone. It just comes out because that's the habitual way in which I address people. But the habit itself has made it easy for me to do good, to reaffirm the good in others. And therefore, my parents did me a great service in forming that habit in me.
Well, I wonder if you have that argument with yourself or second thought about yourself when you come across people who don't share your manners. There's nothing objectively wrong about having different manners, apart from those country ones you talk about. But when you meet someone who doesn't have it, I wonder if you second guess them if you don't do it yourself.
Well, certainly when we look at people who perhaps weren't raised with the same manners, or when they habitually use quite coarse language or even abusive language as part of their normal life. When I went to high school, for example, it was very normal to swear and abuse someone who was your close friend. In fact, it was a way of showing affection. If you saw them on the street, you would give them a rude sign with your hand and yell, you know, get stuffed or whatever you did in slightly less polite language than that. It was just the way in which the city, the town kids spoke to each other. I was initially quite offended, but after a time I realized this is their rather bizarre way of expressing affection, or at least some kind of acknowledgement of each other. And it was quite dangerous if they didn't do that, because that meant you were in a lot of trouble if you weren't acknowledged. But I still think that in situations where we don't know people, or when it's your default behavior, you're better off if your habit is to treat them politely than it is to swear at them. I think it's as a default position, which affirms their goodness and their dignity, the default position is better to be politeness than abuse. When I was a lot younger, I was taught very, very old-fashioned dating habits by my father, who was very, very old-fashioned in his own way. And many of them, at the time I thought, that's just utterly ridiculous. It's just completely ludicrous, out of step with modern society. And I ignored a large part of what he told me.
But carry two handkerchiefs, that kind of thing?
Yes. That Good. Exact that's, example. Is it, can you just explain to our audience why carry two handkerchiefs is a dating thing?
One for you and one for your lady.
Yes. So if you need to offer your handkerchief in the case of emergency or some kind of genuine gentlemanly gesture, you're not offering the snotty one that you've used earlier.
Indeed. And you're always ready for her. Yes.
Yes, indeed.
That's lovely. I'm so glad you were talking. I hope all of the children at home have imbibed that particular lesson.
Well, I don't know that I've told them that because they already think I'm a dinosaur. But
children always think their parents are dinosaurs.
Yeah, but there are some things I cannot shake that I was taught of these kinds of habits, like walking on the road side of the footpath of someone who is like a child or someone smaller than you in some way. It wasn't necessarily a dating thing, just simply because you place yourself at the side of most risk.
Right.
It's something I can't stop doing because it's a habit. It's a good thing. It's a good instinct to want to care for and protect other people. It can become absurd when the habit itself takes over and it's got nothing, like it becomes obsessive. It's nothing to do with the protection of the other person.
Yes. Obsessions are not habitual, though, are they? Obsessions are slightly different, that they engage a bit more of the will than a habit does. Habits like second nature.
But some of these habits can be misread. So one of the ones I learned as a young lad was to open the door for ladies, and that was taken in what I hoped was the right way back then. But several times in my life it's been misunderstood by somebody as a kind of an attempt to date them or some sort of harassment of them, as if every time you open a door for someone you're trying to make an advance on them.
I remember being at university and a lady opened a door for me, and we both kind of, she obviously had this other way of thinking. And she said to me, "Chivalry isn't dead, it's just changed sex."
Oh.
And I just said, "Thank you."
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, if someone opens the door for me, I there's the whole, I don't know if you've ever shared this one with you, but a friend of mine in seminary preached a sermon about Boris and Doris, and it's stuck in my mind since because it was such a ridiculous sermon. He's preaching this sermon just before our morning tea break, and he said, if we have two fictional people called Boris and Doris and they both trying to get out the door to morning tea and they say, no, after you, Boris, after you, Doris, and they stand there the whole time, refusing to give in to the other, then neither of them get morning tea. What manners and good sense require is one of them to submit to the other one's love and simply and to give in and go with it. So either Boris or Doris has to go, thank you very much, and go on. And honestly, if someone wants to pay me that respect, I'm quite delighted to accept it and say thank you.
Well, your father taught you well. That's great.
Well, I mean, this is the old rule about not eating meat on Fridays or having some kind of fasting regime. If someone offers you food, it's much more polite to accept it than to say, no, I'm not doing this, because you accept their gracious offer because it's a loving offer.
And you have something to offer. So abstinence is about little offering that we make to God. You know, we abstain from meat on a Friday to remember the passion, so that offering is there because we're trying to call to mind something which is really beautiful and important. But having to eat the meat on Friday set in front of you when you wouldn't normally eat it is itself something to offer.
Right.
You haven't lost everything just by eating a little bit of meat.
Let's come back to the changing of habits.
Mm.
One of the hardest things is if I have a bad habit to stop it. And some bad habits are quite small, like the chewing of the nails or something, but some of them are bad. Like, I find it very difficult not to correct people with poor grammar. And my children, it's so much so that when someone's preaching and they utter a sentence that's abysmal, my children's heads will swivel around to look to my reaction as if I'm going to leap up and say, "No, Father."
Well, at least they recognize the bad grammar. That's the most important point that you've taught them.
I don't know that is the most important.
The most important good thing that you've taught them.
Very well.
They know the grammar well enough that Dad would object. That's great.
They do know the grammar well enough that Dad would object, not enough that they would do it themselves. But In the sense that that's a habit that which is quite clearly not helpful. If you're in the middle of a party or if you're someone sharing an anecdote and you correct their grammar, it's not a helpful thing at all. It's an annoying thing, and it can come across as being superior or kind of snooty in some ways. So it was quite clearly a habit I had to change. Now, that takes discipline in my own self. It takes me looking at myself and going, no, that's not worth doing. So I need to stop now. My wife has actually trained me quite well in this regard. So every time I answer a question that she's asked, she reminds me 25 words or less. And then she counts them on her hands.
Oh, God, love it. That's so good.
I have become much better at short answers because of our years of marriage.
Right. You've heard of too long, didn't read. This is too long, didn't listen.
That's exactly right.
Oh, bless her. Yeah.
Can you think of any other examples with regards to habits?
Yeah, so a common one that crops up will be bad language, right? So someone's default reaction to something adverse that happens to them or that they see is an expletive of some sort.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that they've engaged their will at that point to, you know, trot out the best four-letter word they know. It's just come up from within them, and they can't explain necessarily why that's the case. The thing about bad habits is that we firstly must have an aversion to them, right? A bad habit that we don't hate is not going to change.
Right.
So that's that
if we like doing it, then it's never going to change.
Right. Or if you don't see the problem in it. Motivation is a huge point about changing a bad habit. It must be unwanted in some way. And the other is that a bad habit must not simply or does not simply get ended. It must be replaced with a good habit, at least a good action.
That's a good point, because we can only grit our teeth and stop ourselves from something for so long. I find this when I'm trying to change my diet as well. I have a habit of comfort eating, so that when something bothers me, I'll go to a particular, like cheese is a bad one for me, because a little bit of cheese is good. A lot of cheese is not so great. And so being aware of my temptations and also being aware of what it takes to change particular habits is an important thing in myself.
So what do you eat instead of cheese to break the comfort eating?
Well, I'll do other things. I'll have water, or I'll do something other than that to make me feel better. So, for example, a little bit of exercise or read a particular book that I enjoy very much, like just a quick chapter of something, or perhaps go and, you know, have a giggle with my kids or something.
Right.
Chat to a friend. Talking to a friend is often a very good way of distracting us from a bad habit. We were speaking in a prior episode with Chantal about this, and she was saying that as soon as you have the urge to do something you really don't want to do but you find difficult to not to do, you should firstly stop, second distract yourself, and get involved with something else, replace something with something else.
That's exactly it.
Calling a friend is often a way to do it if it's a very strong habit that you need to do, but just a simple distraction. I sometimes use a mantra or some kind of a reminder to myself. My children will tell you that it's a very bad habit that I do that, because I'll be on the sports field and rather than internalize my thoughts, I'll often say out loud how I feel about what I've just done on the sports field. And so I will yell quite loudly, "Badly done, Peter," or "Good one," or, like, have a go at myself on the field. And I find that externalizing it gets it out and it's done and I can get on with the match. But it's not so great when another poor young child comes on the field and his name happens to be Peter. and he thinks that this evil man is yelling at him the entire match.
Yes, that poor child becomes this avatar for your insecurities. Oh,
yes,
dear.
Indeed. So my children have told me that I'm to stop that. So,
well, so with bad habits that are sinful, I have advised people in the past to introduce an act of contrition at the moment that they notice, at the moment of, shall we say, clear retrospection, when they understand what they've done, so that they introduce grace into that moment and invite God, who is, of course, our best friend, to do his work in us, and then get back to what we're supposed to be doing.
Are you suggesting that perhaps this is something that some people describe as Catholic guilt? So they see a Tim Tam and immediately feel guilty because they're almost certain to eat it. Is this a positive aspect of that in the sense that if I feel guilty about it, then perhaps there's some behavior to be changed here? There's an attempt. Like if I look at a Tim Tam and immediately feel guilty, then that's probably an indicator. Maybe I just should think about how I'm going to deal with this situation a bit more.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe, too, we have overladen something as, dare I say, inconsequential as a Tim Tam biscuit.
Right.
With certain value judgments about ourselves.
Which is not realistic.
Yeah. So we can
think about it, then would hopefully reveal that.
Right, right. We can go back and re-examine our attitudes to things that do bother us, but which seem to provoke an habitual or learned response from us.
Yeah.
It's not always the case that we are just simply bad people for wanting something like a Tim Tam that's in front of us.
Well, there can be habits of mind and habits of body. So habits, physical habits, are easy to point to because you can see them and you can see the results of them. But mental habits, I have to say, are much harder to deal with. I have a habit of kicking myself over conversations afterwards. Like I'll pick out the three worst things I said and then regurgitate them in my mind for the next 10 years. And that's only partially joking.
You've gone to the effort of recording some of your conversations so that you can play back your haunting moments at different points in your life.
I'm very much afraid I don't need to record conversations because they're all very clear in my head. It's a curse, I tell you. Playing back bad situations, especially when it's something that you wish you hadn't said or you messed up or you didn't catch the cues of, is a bad habit. It's a habit which doesn't help the situation. Now, once you've played it back once and you've decided, okay, this is my judgment of that situation, I will do better next time, then that's over. You should be moving on and learning your lesson. Replaying it and replaying it is a work, I think, of the devil. That is, he's trying to torture you with mistakes rather than deal with, allow you to grow into something better and to accept forgiveness.
He can certainly make good use of that bad thing. I'm not sure that it's always from him, but it's certainly something that can play into his agenda.
No, I'm sure I torture myself well enough without any help from
that's it. That's more the point, isn't it?
In terms of the psychological damage we do it to ourselves, habits of mind, either disliking other people or thinking negatively about circumstances or about ourselves, almost never are good things in that respect. So habits of mind which are positive need to replace them. So if we have a good habit of thinking, well, I remember a very dear priest who I worked under for some time, I used to really be angry with him because he pathologically incapable of thinking ill of anyone. He just couldn't accept that anyone was bad.
So good.
It was very frustrating when he was a boss because you couldn't get him to think ill of anyone. Even his employee that was doing
some
bad things.
Is that what you're saying? Oh, no.
Well, I mean, yeah, anyway. But the point is that it became quite a huge thing later when someone else tried to defame me and he simply wouldn't believe them.
Yes.
Because he simply refused to believe anything bad. Now, in some respects, that's taken to extreme. I remember one of your own brothers changing his habit to say, God love them, whenever someone annoyed him. And and I thought, that's a strange thing to say. And then when I thought about it more, I thought, actually, God does love them. And he's reminding himself that he does.
Yes. Now that I know that, Peter, from you, I'll reread his conversations a whole different way now.
God love them is an excellent kind of way of doing it. Instead of saying that idiot, he says God love them. It's still in the same frustrated tone. It's a kind of a reminder, but it's also a reminder that that's the standard of behavior he's aspiring to himself. If God loves them, then it's my job to kind of align myself to that.
And also a wish that God would love them even if he can't quite yet. Yes. If I know this person as I think I do.
It's a something of a prayer in that way. But habits are incredibly important. I've spoken on another podcast about I decided to wake up each morning and say, good morning, lovely, to my wife every morning because I wanted that to be the truth which was foremost in my mind at the very beginning of each day. Now, if I had to graph her loveliness in terms of externals through the day, the very first thing in the morning would not be the most obvious time when her loveliness is shining out. And yet the choice, the habit of saying those particular words, the habit of greeting we have with each other sets the tone for that relationship. When we say, how are you? I'm fine, thank you. Are you well? You know, that kind of thing. Mostly it's a ritual, but it's a ritual which establishes a mutual care for each other. It establishes at least in at the superficial level that we are interested in the other, that we are not armed, which is what the handshake is about, and that we have no evil intent to the other person, that we in fact wish them well in a general sense. All of these habits are very good things. Habits of waving when someone lets you in a busy street, you know, someone just acknowledging the kindness there. Very strong parts of our society. They seem very small things, but they're the basis of genuine respect between human beings.
Yes. And you raise a good point there about intention in forming good habits. So to be a bit resolute, perhaps, dare I say, a bit stubborn about going for it is always a good thing. We can be really discouraged when it comes to unseating a bad habit and replacing it with a good one, because we don't see the change in every time that the stimulus presents itself as our rising, having risen above it. We regress sometimes. But our growth is a bit like a Christmas tree. You know, we proceed more often than we do not.
Right. We need to reassess the habits, though. So, for example, a lot of the country habits I brought to the city were misunderstood, and I had to reassess whether or not they were necessary. Like standing up every time a lady entered the room became tedious, frankly, when I was in a house of, you know, very lots of people. But it also was misunderstood. It was understood as a kind of a put down for some people, and so I simply had to stop it because it wasn't achieving the end to which it was originally intended. And so I think that while we might respect other people's habits and try to understand them from their intentions, we need to constantly be reevaluating our own habits. Is this a useful thing? Does it help? It may have been useful to call my daughter a pet name when she was a young girl, and perhaps it's not so great now that she's an adult. You know, these kinds of habits need to be constantly thought through. All right, well, that's probably a good place to leave it in that respect. We're aiming for good. We want to check that all our habits are ordered towards good as Catholics. But that's enough for this week's podcast. If today's discussion got you thinking or arguing with us, let us know. You can subscribe to the podcast. I hope you make this podcast your habit at thiscatholiclife.com.au. You can actually find us on all of the podcast apps out there. And you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Discord if you want to chat back to us. Remember, this is a uniquely Australian Catholic podcast, and we think that's a good idea. Tell your friends. We'll be back next week, but that's all for now. Thank you for listening to This Catholic Life.